several miles off the main highway, tucked away in a secluded canyon on prime vineyard property, stands a rustic barn that was built many decades before the vines around it were planted. In that barn, a sophisticated broadcast and recording studio has been built. The barn also has a well-hidden root cellar stocked with many of the world's most exceptional wines, only to be shared with guests who secretly come to offer their insights and tell their stories. Guests are sworn to secrecy and are shuttled to the studio aboard a John Deere tractor. Those who cannot make the journey in person are interviewed by satellite hookup, and sometimes the crew simply sneaks away with microphones in hand and interviews guests in barrel rooms, wine cellars, and other magical places. All of this is done like clockwork every single week, so that we can bring you another episode of Grape Encounters Radio.
And it's time for another fun-filled hour of Grape Encounters Radio with your host, David Wilson. And I want to start today's show by telling you about the first winemaker that I ever knew, who was none other than my dear sweet mom. I was just a kid, and my mom had gone to the local produce market, and she scored a great deal on a whole bunch of, not grapes, but strawberries. And she brought them home, she chopped them up, and she stuffed them through the narrow neck of one of those 5-gallon bottles that you put on top of your water cooler. She then added what had to be a couple of pounds of sugar, some water, and some yeast, and took the whole mess and put it in the hall closet, where it sat for weeks and gurgled and made the most repulsive noises, like somebody who had an upset stomach. But nonetheless, she took the bottle out after it had thoroughly fermented and sifted it through one of those sieves, bottled it up, and my mom and dad drank it for the longest time. I did score a sip a couple of times. Tasted pretty good to me because it was sweet and it contained alcohol, but I'm thinking if I had a chance to taste that wine now, it maybe would not taste so great. Anyway, there are so many people today that are actually making their own wine. It is a swiftly growing hobby, and it seems that every time we talk about the subject on the show, I get a lot of letters from people, and usually those are some of the most downloaded shows that we do here on Grape Encounters Radio. So I wanted to get into the subject a little bit more, and I'm very excited about today's show because we're really going to get into some detail about home winemaking. And so to that end, I am so happy to have on the line today a guy that I've been trying to get on for some weeks now. His name is Tristan Johnson, and he is the division manager for More Wine, which is actually a division of More Flavor. Hey, Tristan, thanks for joining us on Grape Encounters.
Hey, thanks for having me, David.
Okay, now I am absolutely intrigued by More Flavor. Let's start with the corporate entity. You have several different businesses under the More Flavor umbrella. You've got More Beer, More Wine, More Coffee, right?
That's right. We kind of focus on just being able to create great flavor at home. Coffee roasting, beer brewing, wine making, anything that you can enjoy doing around the house.
And then you have More Wine Professional and More Beer Professional. What does it take to become a professional?
Well, you know, not as much as you would expect. Those two divisions really grew out of a large number of our customers taking their overgrown hobbies at home and wanting to turn them into their true careers. So it's just really spending some time working on stuff at home, and then as you grow, eventually you grow to a point where you're making more beer or more wine than you could possibly drink and give away. So
what is the cutoff point? When are you an amateur and when are you a professional? It's really in terms of gallons, right?
Well, yeah, technically, from a legal standpoint, you're only allowed to produce 200 gallons of beer and wine per household per year. So there's a lot of people who are still in the home winemaking and home brewing sort of areas. They're not producing anything that they're going to try and sell commercially, but they're, you know, a little bit outside the limits, technically.
Now, 200 gallons is a lot, right?
Well, you'd think so, but your friend's coming over, and over the course of an entire year, it's enough for a family to.
I think now we had on a few weeks ago Wes Hagen, and I know you know Wes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And for those who are not familiar with Wes, but you should be familiar with Wes if you listen to the show. Wes is the winemaker at Clopepi, but also a really well-known wine judge. He is an AVA author and an all-around good guy. He's one of the most intelligent, educated guys in the wine business that I've ever spoken to. And we did a segment, I don't know if you heard it, Tristan, on making your own wine, but it was really kind of a pep talk about winemaking from the standpoint of just telling people that if they wanted to be in the business and be a boutique winemaker, they could do it without having to buy any equipment and without growing any grapes. We didn't get into the home winemaking thing very much on that show, but as I recall, Wes said that 200 gallons was enough for you to have about a half a bottle every day for a year.
That's about right, yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's not going to be enough for those of us who drink a lot of wine. But so let's talk a little bit about the home winemaking thing, and tell me first of all, with more wine, the kinds of things that you're selling over there. I mean, this is you sell absolutely everything I need to make wine in my garage, my basement, my bathroom, my living room.
That's absolutely right. In fact, our company motto is absolutely everything for winemaking. So from the moment it comes off the vine to the moment you put a cork in the bottle and put a capsule over the top of it, we've got everything that you need in between to make 5 gallons, to make 500 gallons.
Okay, but let's start with the grapes, because that, I think, is a stumbling point for a lot of people. You know, it's like I'm going to start making wine, but, you know, it all begins and ends with the grapes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The quality of the grapes is going to play a huge, huge role in the quality of the wine that you're able to produce. That said, there are a lot of options available to people for how they want to get their fruit, whether they're going to talk to local grape growers, which is always an option for a home winemaker. If you live in a region where you don't have a lot of wine grapes being grown, there are companies based here in California that you can purchase grapes from, and they ship them back east or to the Midwest. There are...
Well, let me interrupt you on that for a second, but how do they do that? Because these grapes have got to be kept cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can get them all the way to the East Coast from the West Coast, and they'll be intact when they arrive?
Yeah, they're shipped in 30-pound lugs in a refrigerated container, and usually it's to a local produce market or home winemaking supply store where they've coordinated with their customers that, you know, X date is going to be the delivery date, and you come down and you pick up your grapes and you're ready to go on that day. But yeah, they can absolutely be shipped across the country just like any other produce can.
So how much fruit are we talking to be able to make 200 gallons of wine?
To make 200 gallons?
Yeah.
Probably just under a ton. You know, it takes about 100 pounds of fruit to make a finished volume of 5 to 6 gallons of wine.
Okay, so just under a ton, and that's like a pickup truck load. You know, they sell one-ton pickups, right? So that's really filling an entire pickup bed full of fruit, right?
Yeah, most of the time, if you're going to be working with that much fruit, you would probably get it in what are called picking bins, which are 4 foot by 4 foot by 2.5 foot plastic bins. And each of those bins holds about a half a ton of fruit when it's, you know, full up. And you can fit one bin in the bed of a standard pickup truck.
Yeah. Anyway, folks, if you're just joining us, we have on the line Tristan Johnson. He is the division manager of More Wine. And the website, Tristan, is morewinemaking.com, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so we got to come back in just a second. We have to break for a commercial, but we're going to talk a lot more about what it's going to take for you to make wine in your own home when we return with more Grape Encounters Radio. Tristan, can you hang on?
You bet.
Okay, we'll be right back. For a number of weeks now, we've been telling you about an event that's going to take place on August 1st at St. Mark's in Los Olivos, which is located in Santa Barbara County, California, if you're not a local. It's the St. Mark's Cellar Classic, featuring an impressive list of rare and fine wines, and this will include more than 100 bottles, including 7 wines rated at 100 points. On an earlier show, we had an interview with Brooks Firestone and Stephen Pepino. Brooks was the founder of the Firestone Vineyard, which was really the first to make wine on the central coast of California, and Stephen Pepi, a terrific Pinot maker and owner of Clos Pepi. Anyway, these guys have gotten together to do this benefit for St. Mark's Episcopal Church, and this is going to be the first rare and fine wine auction on the Central Coast. So it doesn't really matter where you live. It will be worth the effort to come to California if you're out of state and hop on up to Los Olivos for this incredible event. If you want more information on the Cellar Classic, you can go to the Grape Encounters Radio webpage. That's www.grapeencountersradio.com, and you'll see an ad right there on the homepage. Click on that and send those folks an email and tell them that you want to come. There's also a photo gallery on Grape Encounters Radio where you can look at these bottles. The photos are really fabulous, by the way, and you'll see some of the wines that are on sale. Now, speaking of rare wines, I really want to be sure to mention our friends over at Sarlos & Sons. Now, their wines are rare only because they sell out every single year, and you need to get in on the action before they do. I think, actually, some of their wines have already sold out this year. We love their wines. You can go to sarlosandsons.com. We highly recommend them. They're really my personal favorite. And you can go to sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com. Check out their blends. Their blends are really to die for. So, so good. I just drank a bottle of their brother's wine last night, and that is just a wonderful piece of art. Now, you also, if you're in the area, want to go to the tasting room, because it is like no other tasting room that you've been to. It's just so much fun. There's so much action going on there. The people are so incredibly nice. And the Sarlos & Sons wines are totally off the charts. You can sit on their outdoor patio and watch all the goings-on down in downtown Los Olivos. It is a whole lot of fun. And now, more Grape Encounters Radio. And we are back with Grape Encounters Radio. It's David Wilson here, and on the line is Tristan Johnson, the division manager for morewinemaking.com. And these guys are about everything that you need to make and bottle and drink your own wine at home. Hey, Tristan, so we were talking in the last segment about getting the fruit, and a ton of fruit will get you 200 gallons, roughly, of wine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how do you go about that, though? I mean, how do you make the decision of where to purchase the fruit? Because that's a big unknown. And I would think that you could actually contact a winemaker, you know, who's making their own wines and ask them if they have extra fruit that they can sell you, right?
Yeah, you absolutely can. And most winemakers are open to that. If you live in a region where you don't have a lot of wine being made or don't have any wine being made, then typically somewhere nearby there's going to be a home winemaking supply store. And they would be your best first resource in terms of figuring out where to get some fruit. Normally they'll have either resources available to you or recommendations that they can make. Certainly easier if you live in a region that is already a wine-producing region, and if that's the case, not necessarily just going to wineries, but there are a lot of vineyards out there where there's no wine produced. The man who owns the vineyard is just a farmer, and what he happens to grow are wine grapes. And a lot of those vineyards are also happy to sell fruit to home winemakers. So
it seems so puzzling to me, though. If I were to contact you guys and say, you know, I want to make wine on the caliber of, you know, and then I name a particular winemaker, could you point me in the right direction?
Well, we could start to. Sometimes with the real high-end vineyards, you know, the vineyard is under contract to the winery. And
right.
So there may or may not be fruit available to a home winemaker. What I would normally do is point you in the direction of a website that we run that's a free service for grape growers and for winemakers called moregrapes.com, which is basically a bulletin board service for people who are looking to purchase grapes and people who have grapes to sell.
Oh, wait. Now, this is okay. This I have never heard about, so let's make sure we get this straight. It's moregrapes.com.
That's right.
And if I'm a grape grower, I post this information on there that I have grapes available?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And how many different people are participating on this site?
At least a few hundred every year.
No kidding. And
yeah.
You guys run this?
Yeah, it's just a free service that we do as part of our total package for winemakers. Getting into the business of trying to sell grapes is a little bit more than we were interested in, but we wanted to provide some sort of resource for people to be able to get in contact with growers. So,
well, I think that's imperative, if you ask me, to be able to point people in that direction. But let's talk about exactly the kinds of things that you sell at More Wine. And I don't mean this to be a commercial for More Winemaking. It's just that there are so many people that are interested in the idea of actually, you know, producing their own wines. How fast is that growing, personal winemaking, that is?
Oh, it's growing very quickly. I don't know if we have a number for how many people are adding on every year, but our business has seen continued growth over the last 6-7 years. Home brewing is certainly growing exponentially. So I agree, there's a lot of interest in this, and I think that that's a wonderful thing. You know, it's not too long ago in our history that people made beer and wine at home as a matter of course.
Right.
So it's nice to see people getting back to that a little bit.
So here's a question. With the economy as it is, has your business been affected in a negative or a positive way?
A little bit of both. We see more new customers. We see a little bit, you know, less spending per customer, but there's an old saying in the alcohol business that when things are going great, people drink, and when things are going bad, people drink more. So,
yeah, okay. So, how do I get started? Because the challenge, I think, is if I know very little about wine making, can you really hook me up and can you set me in the right direction?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, probably the first thing that you want to do if you're getting started is go to our website at morewinemaking.com. Click the link on the left-hand side of the page that says First Time Making Wine, and we're going to present you with the different ways that you can get started. So certainly the most complete way to get started making wine is going to be to source some fresh fruit, get a hold of a crushing and destemming machine, get a hold of a press, and really go through the whole process start to finish. And that's relatively easy to do. It's probably the most significant investment that you're going to make in terms of the different ways to get started. But one way that you can avoid that high capital investment initially is to see if you have a local winemaking shop or winemaking club which has equipment either available to rent or to borrow. And that's pretty common.
Now, I can actually buy the juice as well, right?
Yeah, you can buy juice, and actually from us exclusively, you can buy frozen must, which is through a company called Brem Vineyards. These guys, for probably the last 20 years, have been supplying very, very high-quality must from vineyards, which you typically are not going to have access to as a home winemaker. They supply it in 5.5-gallon pails. If it's white, excuse me, it's already been pressed off, and you just have juice that's ready for fermentation. For reds, we have the must, which is a combination of the juice and the skins and the pulp from the fruit, since that's where the wine's going to get a lot of its color and body. And you can purchase those. We can actually ship them in special packaging that we've developed here in-house by UPS Ground, so we can ship them anywhere in the country. And that's a really great way to get started with a very high-quality fruit with a relatively low investment in equipment. And what we found is that especially for the first-time winemaker, making the choice to go with a real high-quality starting material is important because it's going to increase your chances for success and decrease the chance that you're going to have something that you're not very happy with and that you're going to give up.
If you're just joining us, we've got Tristan Johnson on the line. We've wanted to get him on for a long time. He's a division manager for morewinemaking.com, and you have got to check out their website. You guys carry absolutely everything, right? I mean, from the most basic equipment to the most elaborate, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And, and then you cross the line from home winemaking to boutique winemaking, right?
That's exactly right, both on the equipment level, and then we sort of crossed the line going back the other direction as well. We're the only company that's authorized by the producers of commercial-grade yeasts and additives to repackage those into sizes that are applicable to home winemaking, and we do that in-house under a sterile HEPA filter into nitrogen-purged bags and stuff like that. So on the one hand, we're well-equipped to take an amateur winemaker up a level to the professional scale. We're also trying really hard to bring professional quality ingredients and materials to people who are working at a home scale.
All right, so here's a question. How many people take the plunge and go from home winemaking to professional winemaking? How often do you actually see that happen?
I probably work with a half a dozen customers a year who are going from home winemaking to small commercial production.
About a half a dozen. You mean like a half a dozen per year? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about a half a dozen per year.
How many home winemakers are you servicing right now?
Somewhere in the 8,000 to 10,000 range.
Holy smoke!
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say 800 to 1,000. You're kidding me.
No.
That many?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So the preponderance of those people are buying fresh fruit, or are they buying the must?
The preponderance of those people are going to be buying fresh fruit. Or because the frozen must, in terms of its being available by standard shipping methods, is a brand new thing for the home winemaking community, the rest of those customers are working with concentrate kits that are available on the market, which is the other way to get started in winemaking.
Does that really taste good, though, in the end?
You know, it's a little bit subjective. It's hard for me to say so, but I also live in Northern California, so...
I know. It kind of makes my skin crawl a little bit, but I don't know.
The whites are a lot better than the reds. I think if it's a way that you want to explore for getting started, stick with the white wines, especially if you're used to drinking a lot of good wine.
So of these 8 to 10,000 people, how many of them turn to you guys for assistance in acquiring or finding or locating the grapes?
Not a huge number. What we were discussing about our bulletin board website for people to be able to source grapes, that's sort of where our involvement in that ends, unless you're purchasing the frozen must through us. There's a certain point at which coordinating deliveries out of vineyards and getting people down to the shop to pick stuff up is more work than we're able to take on at the same time of the year that we are receiving equipment shipments inbound from Europe and shipping stuff back out.
Now, you mentioned winemaking clubs. Mm-hmm. How many of those are there out there? How do I find them? How do I get involved in that?
The easiest way to find them is to go to the website for Winemaker Magazine.
Okay.
And they actually have a section of the website devoted to clubs. It's broken down by state. There are winemaking clubs all over the country. There are home brewing clubs all over the country. Typically, for every major metropolitan area, there's going to be a home winemaking, home brewing club.
And what's the advantage to my being a member of the club?
Well, there's several advantages. First of all, you get to spend time with like-minded people, and really there's no better way to learn day-to-day than to talk to people who have been doing this themselves, in many cases for, 10, 20 years. So the amount of learning that you're going to get, you can read a book 10 times over, but that's not going to be as effective as getting your hands wet, so to speak, and you can ask me questions, you can ask any other retailer questions, but being in a group of people who have all experienced the issues that we all experience as winemakers, who've been through it before and can give you on-the-spot advice, the ability to taste different wines that people have been producing at home and have these experienced palates tasting your wine. Right. That's one thing that I can't do for a customer who's not local to me is actually, you know, taste their wine and give them advice about
it. Gotcha. Hey, Tristan, you got to hang on for just a second. We unfortunately have to go to commercials, or fortunately for our advertisers, but we'll be right back. Can you hang with us one more segment?
Yeah.
We'll be back with more Grape Encounters Radio with my guest, Tristan Johnson, the division manager for morewinemaking.com. Hey, listen, folks, if you're on Facebook, we really, really want to encourage you to become our Facebook friend and join the Grape Encounters Radio group page. It's a whole lot of fun, and we can make all kinds of recommendations to you there. We can connect you with great winemakers and let you know what's going on in the world of wine. Please just go on over to Grape Encounters Radio's Facebook page and be our friend. We are definitely friends with benefits. And also, be sure to check out GrapeEncountersRadio.com, where I was very surprised the other day to see how many photographs we've got posted of all the places we've been and the people that we've talked to. If you want to put a face to the voice, then just go over to GrapeEncountersRadio.com and click on the Photos button, and it will take you to our photo gallery. And there are literally hundreds and hundreds of photos there, including those very talked-about photographs of the Artiste Tasting Room mermaids with the painted-on costumes. Well worth the trip over to Grape Encounters Radio. We also have a blog there, a new blog, that we'd really like you to participate in, and you can put your comments there. We'd love, love, love to hear from you there. Now, Grape Encounters Radio does get involved with a number of events, and one of them that's coming up is the Chardonnay Symposium. It will take place on Saturday, July 31st, 2010, of course, and it's going to take place in the Santa Maria Valley, and it is put on by the Santa Maria Valley Wine Country. And this is an event that is going to have so many fun things going on. There are going to be a couple of really, really interesting talks that you can attend. The morning session, you'll have a choice of two different sessions that you can go to. There's a wine tasting luncheon. You'll receive a Riedel wine glass, and then at the end, the Grand Chardonnay tasting. If you're a Chardonnay lover, please hop on over to thechardonnaysymposium.com. Now, of course, this is going on the central coast of California, well worth the drive from any place in California or the surrounding states, or you can just go on their website and wish that you were attending. But we really want you to check it out. Again, it's thechardonnaysymposium.com. And boy, oh boy, some of the really incredible Chardonnay makers will be there. There are, I think, close to 20 involved in this. And it's really something you really don't want to miss. If you have any questions, you can go to info@smvwines.com. Again, it's info@smvwines.com for more information on the Chardonnay Symposium taking place Saturday, July 31st. And now back to more Grape Encounters Radio. And we are back with more Grape Encounters Radio. David Wilson, your host here. We're getting a major education from our guest, Tristan Johnson, who's the division manager of morewinemaking.com. And hey, Tristan, in this segment, I really want to talk about what it takes to make this happen. And hopefully you can tell me how I can get in on the cheap. Too.
Sure.
I know there are some people that want to get in with the Rolls Royce of winemaking equipment, but how cheap can I start?
Well, to make 10 or 20 gallons of wine at home, if you can find a club or a shop where you can rent or borrow the crushing equipment and the press, then really just a couple hundred dollars for a container to ferment it in, some yeast and nutrients and supplies, a couple of glass jugs to age the wine out in, maybe some oak to add in there, and your biggest investment is going to be patience.
So I'm going to skip the oak barrel,
yeah,
and I'm just going to buy chips, right?
Chips or what we call cubes, which have a toasting process that a little bit better emulates what flavor profiles and aroma profiles you would get out of a barrel. But yeah, something along those lines.
How are those made? What are those made of?
They're still made of toasted oak. It's a difference in the manufacturing process. With the chips, the oak is chipped and then toasted, and because it's a real thin piece of wood, you just get an even toast throughout the entire piece of the chip. With the cubes, they have 12-millimeter cubes, and the whole piece that the cube is going to be cut from is toasted on its own before they're cut. What that causes to happen is the wood at the surfaces is a little bit more heavily toasted than what's inside, which is exactly what you see if you cut a stave of a barrel and look at it crossways. Each of those different levels of toast is going to produce a different aroma and flavor in the wine, so you're going to have a lot more complexity in a thicker piece of wood that's toasted before it's cut down to the size that's going to be added into the wine.
And it's surprisingly effective, right?
Incredibly effective, yeah.
And I can fool somebody into believing that I actually put it in an oak barrel.
It's certainly going to have all the flavor and aroma. You know, there's some interaction with a small amount of oxygen that takes place in a barrel that you can't replicate, at least not at a home winemaking scale. But, you know, you make a very, very good wine, and to all but the most educated palates, I think that you could certainly fool them, yeah.
Okay, so I'm guessing that you make wine at home.
Absolutely.
Okay, and you're making 200 gallons? Or are you a pro?
I make a little bit less. We also have a small winery here at our facility in Northern California, and
I'm
the assistant winemaker for that facility. So plenty of wine, one way or the other.
So you're actually the winemaker?
I'm the assistant winemaker, yeah.
Oh, okay. So tell me what you guys are making there.
We make small lot Cab Sauvignon, Zinfandel, and Cab Franc each year.
And so this is actually a commercial venture, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you get your fruit from where?
Our fruit comes from vineyards in the Sonoma Valley, in the Dry Creek region, and in Alexander Valley.
So let me ask you this, with the economy being pretty far off right now,
mm-hmm.
is it easier to get top quality fruit than it used to be, and is it cheaper?
Yes, on both counts. There are a lot of wineries right now who are heavily stocked in case goods and have scaled their production back significantly. With the economic impact that is being felt throughout the wine business, that trickles all the way down to the growers. And so wineries are canceling contracts. Growers have been forced to drop the price of the fruit significantly.
How much of that fruit winds up in, you know, bottles like, you know, Charles Shaw and some of these mass-produced wines? Does a lot of really good fruit end up going that direction?
Yeah, now the...
I don't mean Charles Shaw per se, but, you know, those kinds of companies.
Most of the really inexpensive wines are not going to be coming from the fruit that is in the more famous growing regions.
Right.
A lot of those are going to come from, say, the Central Valley of California, from the massive Gallo holdings or something along those lines.
You're talking about, like, up above Bakersfield, those areas, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anywhere really from Lodi all the way down to Fresno.
Yeah, okay. And those are just massive growing areas, aren't they?
Yeah, literally hundreds of thousands of acres of wine grapes.
And as I understand it, still the number one crop up there is French Colombard, right?
That's a possibility.
That's a blending grape, right? It used to be you would go into the supermarket and you'd see bottles of French Colombard, but you don't see that anymore. But I think that is, you know, one of the primary blending grapes, if I'm not mistaken.
It's certainly a varietal that has fallen out of vogue, but we see that a lot in the wine industry. You know, you look at what happened to Merlot a few years ago and what happened to Pinot Noir.
So. Yeah, I want to talk about that, too. Let's talk about that, but I want to make sure that people know who we're talking to. It's Tristan Johnson, if you're just joining us. He is the division manager of morewinemaking.com, an incredible company that supplies both amateur home winemaking equipment and commercial equipment as well. And Merlot, this, I'm fascinated by this because we were talking to Wes Hagen some weeks ago, and he mentioned the fact that the price of Merlot grapes had just fallen into the basement.
Absolutely.
And how far has it fallen?
Well, from the height of Merlot's popularity, say, you know, immediately pre-sideways, where we had fruit that was at the top end for maybe $5,000 a ton, down to, you know, probably an average of $1,500 to $2,000 a ton.
Oh, that's a big crash.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big crash. And the thing is that people just stop buying it.
Let me ask you this, though. Everybody blames that crash on sideways. Is that really true?
I mean, as far as I can tell, you took something that was the most popular wine to drink and to buy, and then literally in a matter of a year, its sales were through the floor and Pinot Noir sales were through the roof.
It's absolutely amazing.
A funny coincidence if it's not directly caused, you know.
Okay, so the website is morewinemaking.com. You guys even have some free winemaking books available that you can download, right?
Yeah, in fact, we've got over 30 different manuals on all aspects of winemaking that are free downloads available on the website. We have two 75-page or longer guides to winemaking that are devoted specifically to making red wines or white wines that you can download for free as PDFs, or you can purchase from us as a printed bound book.
By the way, I looked at those, and those are not just shameless commercials for morewinemaking.com. They're really very informative, and you got to check it out. Tell them where to find it on the website.
Just go to morewinemaking.com/manuals.
Manuals, right. And they're an easy, quick evening read. And if you have any interest at all in making wine at home, that's something I would definitely check out, because it's really synthesized down into some easy reading, and it'll get you started, right?
Yeah. We just tried to kind of put together all of the advice that we would give any winemaker into one place so that, you know, oftentimes, especially when we have other careers and family obligations, we don't get into the winery until 9 or 10 at night to try and get something done. And,
right.
You know, I'm not at my desk at that hour, so if you had a question that you would have called in to ask us, you can find the answer to that question in those guides.
Now, let me ask you about being a professional winemaker. The thing that always scares me in these kinds of things is regulation. We're talking about an alcoholic beverage, which is something that's heavily regulated in this country.
That's true.
So if I decide tomorrow that I want to make, you know, a small amount of commercial wine, what do I have to do?
Well, you have two approaches that you can take. One is to contact a custom crush facility, similar to, I know you guys have worked with Terravant down in the Central Coast area quite a bit.
Yeah.
There are facilities like that throughout the state of California and up the West Coast, and they can definitely help you get started. If you want to develop a wine brand, produce a little bit, but don't want to go through all of the headaches of the paperwork and produce or procuring equipment and doing all of the grunt work yourself. If you do want to do all of the work yourself and have this be in your garage and really do all the work on your own, which we would absolutely applaud, the best place to start is with a consultant. There are a number of guys around the country who are officials for the TTB, the Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, who regulate alcohol production. And these guys, for a relatively modest fee, will walk you through the process of doing all the paperwork from the federal level all the way down to the local level.
How complex is it really, though?
You want to hire one of these guys.
Yeah, okay. Question answered. So is this going to be a long process? Is it going to be an expensive process?
It takes about a year.
Oh, my.
To get all the paperwork processed and approved all the way from the federal level to the local level. And as far as the expense is concerned, if you do it yourself, it's just a few hundred dollars in filing fees and registering this and that. I've never known somebody who attempted to do it themselves and got it right on the first pass. So one of these consultants will cost you probably $1,000 or $1,500. It's money well spent if you're really trying to make an investment and begin to see a return on that investment.
Now, if I go to a facility like Terravant in Buellton, and there are many of these facilities, am I sidestepping some of that?
Some of that, yeah. You don't have to worry about getting a facility bonded.
Okay, gotcha. Hey, Tristan, you know what? I hadn't planned on doing this, but we are out of time in this segment, and I'm not through with questions. So I'm going to ask you to hang on for just a little bit longer, if that's okay.
Yeah.
We're going to come back in just a second, folks, with more Grape Encounters Radio with our guest, Tristan Johnson, who's telling us all about home and professional winemaking. Really fascinating stuff. Hang with us for just a second. For a number of weeks now, we've been telling you about an event that's going to take place on August 1st at St. Mark's in Los Olivos, which is located in Santa Barbara County, California, if you're not a local. It's the St. Mark's Cellar Classic, featuring an impressive list of rare and fine wines, and this will include more than 100 bottles, including 7 wines rated at 100 points. On an earlier show, we had an interview with Brooks Firestone and Stephen Pepino. Brooks was the founder of the Firestone Vineyard, which was really the first to make wine on the central coast of California. And Stephen Pepi, a terrific Pinot maker and owner of Clos Pepi. Anyway, these guys have gotten together to do this benefit for St. Mark's Episcopal Church, and this is going to be the first rare and fine wine auction on the Central Coast. So it doesn't really matter where you live. It will be worth the effort to come to California if you're out of state and hop on up to Los Olivos for this incredible event. If you want more information on the Cellar Classic, you can go to the Grape Encounters Radio webpage. That's www.grapeencountersradio.com, and you'll see an ad right there on the homepage. Click on that and send those folks an email and tell them that you want to come. There's also a photo gallery on Grape Encounters Radio where you can look at these bottles. The photos are really fabulous, by the way, and you'll see some of the wines that are on sale. Now, speaking of rare wines, I really want to be sure to mention our friends over at Sarlos & Sons. Now, their wines are rare only because they sell out every single year, and you need to get in on the action before they do. I think, actually, some of their wines have already sold out this year. We love their wines. You can go to sarlosandsons.com. We highly recommend them. They're really my personal favorite. And you can go to sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com. Check out their blends. Their blends are really to die for. So, so good. I just drank a bottle of their brother's wine last night, and that is just a wonderful piece of art. Now, you also, if you're in the area, want to go to the tasting room, because it is like no other tasting room that you've been to. It's just so much fun. There's so much action going on there. The people are so incredibly nice. And the Sarlos & Sons wines are totally off the charts. You can sit on their outdoor patio and watch all the goings-on down in downtown Los Olivos. It is a whole lot of fun. And now, more Grape Encounters Radio. And we're back with more Grape Encounters Radio, and we have forced our guest, Tristan Johnson of morewinemaking.com, to stay on the line. Twice as long, Tristan, as I promised you, but there's so much to talk about when it comes to making your own wine, right?
There is tons, and you know, I'm happy to be on the line with you. It's not so often that we get to have a protracted conversation like this. So.
Well, it's just that there are so many people that I think are fascinated with this. When we had Wes Hagen on, I don't know what it was, probably about a month ago. It was the most downloaded show that we had. I was astounded by how fascinated I think people were about this particular subject, and there's a lot of options in terms of making wine. And how many of these facilities like Terravant exist that you know of?
That I know of off the top of my head.
I mean, there are dozens and dozens and dozens, right?
Yeah.
Or is it hundreds?
No, it's more like dozens. I was just thinking to myself, you know, I can probably name a dozen off the cuff, but those are going to be the major ones here in Northern California, or the ones in other parts of the country that I've done business with. And, you know, you don't have to be a facility that's dedicated specifically to doing custom crush to
right.
do this. There are a lot of wineries that have extra production capacity,
right?
And we'll do a little bit of custom crush on the side because it's a great revenue stream for them.
So let's talk about the options for a second, okay? There are large custom crush facilities that if you wanted to be a boutique winemaker, you can talk to these guys. They can hook you up. They can provide you with the expertise and guidance to actually be a commercial winemaker. But there are smaller facilities that will help you just with personal home winemaking. It's not home winemaking, but personal winemaking, right?
There are. There's, you know, if you're talking about something that's not going to be sold, that's just somebody helping you make your wine.
Right.
There's only one facility that I know of that'll do that, and that's a place in San Francisco called Crush Pad.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about them, and it sounds like a really interesting facility. I wonder how many people are working with them.
You know, I don't know off the top of my head. I know it, of all of the ways to, say, get started making wine, it's certainly the most expensive way, but they work with nothing but the best quality fruit, nothing but the best barrels, and you're actually, in part of what you're paying for, you're essentially hiring a professional winemaker to walk your wine through the process. So
right. So let's go back to your company for a second. You can get in for as cheap as a few hundred dollars,
mm-hmm.
and the guys who are really fanatics about home winemaking are spending how much on equipment?
As much as $40,000-$50,000.
Holy
on their
smoke! And they're making some incredible wines, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And that's really, I have to say, that is taking it as far as you can take it at home.
Yeah. The average person is spending what?
Somewhere probably between $1,500 and $3,000 by the time they're done.
Oh, that's nothing, right?
It's not a huge amount, and it's not an expense that comes all at once. You know, that's over the course of a few years. Well, this year I'm going to get this piece of equipment. This year I'm going to get this piece of equipment. By the time you're done, you know, $3,000 or so.
You know what? I got to do the math on this for a second. So let's say, well, first of all, if I buy Merlot grapes, and I'm no longer spending $5,000 a ton, but I'm spending $1,500 a ton,
mm-hmm.
I've got enough money left over to buy the equipment.
Yeah, easily.
You know, this is that's a really good sales pitch for you, by the way, and you can use that free of charge. But it's true, right? What I'm saving on grapes, I can buy equipment with, right?
Yeah, easily. And I would say that when we talk about $4,000, $5,000 a ton, that's really top money for fruit from top-growing regions. So if you can get a hold of fruit from just outside a top-growing region or from an area that just doesn't have the same cachet from a marketing perspective when you put it on a bottle, you can easily buy fruit between $1,000 and $2,000 a ton. That's a more realistic expectation in terms of what you're going to spend.
Okay, now I don't have a calculator in front of me. In fact, I don't even have my iPhone. But we're talking about a ton of fruit at, let's say we spend $2,000 on it, okay? I'm getting 200 gallons, roughly, of wine out of that. How many bottles is that?
How many bottles is 200 gallons?
Yeah. I didn't mean to throw you a curveball.
I know. I don't have to.
It all comes down to how many bottles.
Well, let's look at it in terms of cases.
All right.
A standard barrel, 60 gallons, is 25 cases of wine. So if you have three of those barrels, you have 75 cases times 12... 900 bottles of wine.
So 900 bottles of wine. So I take $2,000 and I divide it by 900, and what do I get? A couple bucks a bottle?
Yeah.
That's nothing. That's nothing. I need to be making my own wine because that's nothing. That's way cheaper than what I'm spending on wine.
Yeah.
Okay. And now you got to buy the bottles too. How much is a bottle?
Cases of bottles, anywhere from $8 to $15, depending on the glass. So if you figure between bottle and cork and capsule, $1 to $1.50 a bottle is
Tristan,
right.
That's what I'm spending on the wine. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Why do I want to spend $1.50 for the bottle? Now I can save up my bottles, right?
Absolutely.
A lot of people do that, right?
Yeah, and you know, you can put your wine in kegs too. So,
well, there you go. So, folks, if you're just joining us, this is so interesting. It's Tristan Johnson. He's the division manager for morewinemaking.com. If you have any interest at all in making wine, you have got to go to their website and check it out. It's morewinemaking.com, as I said, and there's lots and lots of information there. And you guys are a great resource. You will connect new winemakers with grape growing sources. Services, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got that billboard. And tell us again what that is.
That's moregrapes.com.
Moregrapes.com. And you can link there from morewinemaking.com,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's a banner right at the top of the page this time of year.
You can find your manuals for making wine there at morewinemaking.com. And then it's pretty easy to go down the list and look at the type of equipment that is available as well.
Yeah, we've got the website laid out in chronological order for the winemaking process. So the first category of equipment is going to be what you're going to use to crush the grapes and separate them from the stems. And then the next category is, well, what do I ferment it in, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so let's go down the list. I'm going to invest $2,000 in equipment.
Okay.
Okay, that's what I got to spend. That's my budget. So what are you going to sell me for that?
Well, I'm going to sell you a hand crank crushing and destemming machine.
How much is that?
You're going to use to process your bunches of grapes down into must.
How much is that?
Either going to be $500 or so, or about $700, depending on if you get the one that's partially made of stainless steel.
Okay, that's chump change. Yeah. Okay, then what?
Then I'm going to sell you a basket press, a wooden press that you'll use for separating the juice from the solids, either before fermentation for white wines or after fermentation for red wines. That's going to be $300 to $400.
Okay, that's not bad. What else?
Some large plastic bins to perform the fermentation in if you're making red, which most people are making red wine, especially when they get started.
Right.
Doesn't require.
And the plastic bins do not impart the taste of plastic into the wine?
No, all of the containers that we sell are food grade, so they don't impart any flavor or aroma whatsoever.
But a commercial winemaker is not using plastic generally, right?
Some of them are, yeah.
They are?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have these containers, and now what?
Well, you need, for red wine, you need a stainless steel punch-down tool so that you can resubmerge capturing fermentation. You need some yeast and nutrients, and there are some professional quality additives like enzymes that, some winemakers prefer not to use. We find that it really improves the quality of a wine, and, it shouldn't be thought of as cheating, at all. The vast majority of commercial winemakers are using them as well. Then you need a container to store the wine in for the aging process. So that's either going to be something out of stainless steel if you want to make a big investment, or glass jugs that hold 6 gallons each.
And then what if I wanted real barrels? How much?
Depends on the size of the barrel, but you can do 30-gallon barrels for around $300 brand new. You can do 60-gallon barrels for as little as about $450 brand new.
Wow.
That can go up into the $1,200 range for the very best French oak barrels.
Well, I hate to say it, Tristan, we are out of time.
Wow.
And we are going to have you back.
Well, listen.
And I think you're going to have to put together a special package for Grape Encounters listeners. It'll be the Grape Encounters Home Winemaking Package. If you're willing to do that, I think it'd be great.
Yeah, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay, the site is morewinemaking.com. Our friend here is Tristan Johnson, who knows everything about everything. And you just check the site out. It will take you where you need to go if you want to make your own wine. And I wish we had more time to talk about it, but we are done with this week's Grape Encounters Radio. We'll be back again next week. But all of our shows, a year worth of shows, are available online at grapeencountersradio.com, or check us out at the iTunes store. And Tristan, thanks for being with us today. And will you come back?
Yes, absolutely. All right. Thanks for having me, and I'd be happy to come back.
Okay, cool. Until then, folks, please keep the glass half full. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters Radio next week.